Hello, friends, and welcome to another Brew Theology podcast. This is Ryan Miller, and on today's episode, we have the honor of speaking with Reverend Amanda Henderson from the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado. Amanda does pretty fantastic things within our city and our state. We had the honor to have her at Wits End Brewing Company here in Denver to speak with our Denver Brew Theology community. And now we get to have her speak to you guys out there across the nation and the world. So Amanda speaks about this idea of gathering our people during really tense times. And I'm just going to warn you right now, a little bit of earmuffs if you have children in the car. Here we go. You've muted. Okay, shit's getting real, okay? Shit is getting real. And so this is going to be a highly politically charged podcast, but it's also going to be socially charged and what it means for us as Americans, as people who have a heart and compassion and a longing for those on the margins of society, those who are oppressed, and what it looks like for us to actually put our feet into action just beyond our words. I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, please rate us on iTunes, write a review as well, and make sure you follow us on Facebook at Brew Theology, as well as Twitter, Brew_Theology, and Instagram at Brew Theology. You can always visit our website, www.brewtheology.org. Check out what it looks like for you if you're interested to become a partner with us in your city and in your town. Don't let the numbers scare you. If you really want a partner and you need a lot of help, we would love to help you. And so just email me at ryan@brewtheology.org and tell me what it would look like for you to possibly start this in your community. And we would love to give you the resources and the coaching to get that started. All right, friends, we will see you on the other side. Peace. All right, good to have everybody tonight. Alex, Janelle, Liz, and I are together interviewing Reverend Amanda Henderson from the Interfaith Alliance. Yeah. So you were not always a religious person, Amanda.
True.
So tell us a little bit about yourself growing up. How did you become somebody who is involved in religion, is in interfaith? That's a long story, but...
Yeah, the short version.
Yeah.
So I told a little bit of this last week, so this will be a recap, but I grew up in a family that I say was early spiritual but not religious types. My father was raised Southern Baptist and very conservative family and background, and my mother was raised the child of an abusive alcoholic and rebelled and went to church. And that was where she met my dad. But she had a very idealized version of what life could be. And they went to church thinking they would find that, and they quickly didn't. And when they did not find that idealized version of life, they left and never went back. And so I was raised until I was about five in the church, and then was raised going on hikes, reading the Bible, more spiritual connected. I personally always felt connected to God and always felt curious and was a learner. And so that was my outlet. Parallel to that, I went to high school in Colorado Springs in a very conservative community where it wasn't uncommon to have somebody say, "Have you accepted Jesus Christ into your heart?" And when I would look at them like, "What are you talking about?" I did not fit and really rejected a lot of that. But at the same time, always was curious. And then in my 20s, started really longing for community and longing for space to ask questions and to learn. And after the birth of my first daughter, 15 years ago, right now, went to a Disciples of Christ congregation in Fort Collins and found that space where I could ask questions and where it was justice-oriented and it felt like family. And I also saw that church was a place where you didn't have to be perfect and you could mess up and people would still love you. And that wasn't the reputation I had heard about church. And so from that, wound up leaving my career in nutrition and going back to seminary, and our family moved to Fort Worth, Texas for 3 years and did my schooling at Bright Divinity School, and then really got involved in interfaith work and discovered that that was the place where I could constantly be learning and growing and building connections and working for justice.
Did you get really holy and fall in love with the Dallas Cowboys while you were there?
I did not.
Nobody did.
But my husband's cousin played for the Cowboys, so their family are big Cowboys
fans. So you were grafted into the Holy Vine.
A little bit, but yeah.
No, can I ask you, the Disciples of Christ, is that, what, Wesley? Like, what is that lineage?
So, Disciples are a congregational polity, and so they're in the same, they're founded in 1840, out of a longing to do away with denominations, they formed a new denomination.
As they all do.
And so it's actually from the similar roots as the Church of Christ, believe it or not, and United Church of Christ and Disciples of Christ.
Oh, interesting.
We're all similar roots. And actually, we were born out of Presbyterian and Baptist pastors who came together, leaders, Campbell and Stone, came together and formed a new community. That's why it's Christian Church. We are all supposed to be Christian Church. Nobody else got the message, but we did. And then you parenthesize your kind of sect.
So that's how that started.
Fascinating. Oh my gosh. American Christianity.
It is actually the first Christian denomination from American soil.
Really?
What they say. I'm not really sure.
What year?
1840. Same time frame as Mormonism.
I was going to say Joseph Smith.
Yeah, it was during the revivals and lots of spiritual movements.
And the Baptist revival. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Cool.
The Baptists always claim the roots, so, you know.
Yeah.
There's that, too. It's so funny. Like, it depends on who you talk to, because I remember growing up, it was like, well, the Baptists were the first, because, you know, John and the baptizing the Jordan with Jesus, the JJJ.
Everybody's the first.
Which then you, of course, everybody's the first.
The Nazarenes were first. Jesus was a Nazarene.
We didn't got 500 years on Christianity.
And this whole time, the Jews are going, hey, guys,
stop taking our stuff.
I was actually at the World Council of Churches a few years ago in Seoul, and there were people from all over the world, and I met a man who was a Coptic Christian, actually from Syria, and he had the full garb on with the big hat and the robe, and he literally looked at me and said, we are the original Christians, because we're the only ones who have held on to the traditions, and he was like stalwart in it. And all I could think was, I don't think Jesus wore a giant hat.
Yes.
And like, I like it.
Where's your prayer shawl?
Yeah.
Do you read Hebrew?
We should do a Coptic.
That would be fun.
It would be very fun.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Church of Ethiopia.
So Amanda does surround herself with people from different kinds of religious tribes. But how did you end up in the Interfaith Alliance?
So, Interfaith Alliance specifically, when I finished seminary in 2012, I had always had this, do I go into, I had a passion for interfaith work and nonprofit work and justice oriented, and had an opportunity to work in a congregation to get back to Denver. And so I was in a congregation and knew that it was time for me to find something else. And someone reached out to me and said, your perfect job is waiting. So do you want to apply? And that's how I did. But interfaith work, I went to an interfaith seminarian's retreat when I was in school, and discovered that it was in spaces with people from other religions that I actually came to understand my Christianity in ways that I never did when I was around other Christians.
Yeah.
And also I went to Israel and Palestine, and then kept taking every opportunity I could get to go and be around people from multiple religious traditions, because I not only learned about theirs, but I started to reflect on how I felt about communion and how I felt about the Trinity, and those deep theological questions actually came into light in interfaith spaces.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I mean, our whole backgrounds, I don't know if I can speak to all of us here, maybe some of us, it was you stay within your tribe. And yet, in your instance, your tribe became more dynamic when you were with other tribes.
Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now that we're speaking of tribalism, we're in a time right now where it's very divisive. There are many tribes, and you take a side, and you've kind of, the title is Shit's Getting Real, Time to Gather Our People, which is a tribal language.
It is tribal language.
So tell us about this. And
I feel a tension there, and you wrote about that a little bit. But
yeah.
Like, even that language makes me uncomfortable.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But I also know it's important to have a group of people around you. And so it's very, that tension is thick.
Uh-huh.
And I don't, yeah.
So how do you reconcile with all that? Because the different tribes, the interfaith, and now, but this is our people, and this is our cause.
So two things. So first, one of the reasons why I came to understand my own identity in interfaith spaces is because relationships are far more dynamic when a person knows who they are, right? It's far more fun to be in a relationship with somebody who has a strong sense of identity.
Yeah.
And that was one of the other things about being in interfaith spaces is I realized it's far more interesting if you are a Jewish person who really understands Jewish culture, teaching, context, and then that challenges me to know myself. I'm not asking you to be me, and I'm not seeking to be you.
Right.
But when I'm deeply grounded in my community and my roots, then I can be more open to other people in ways that I can't when I'm not deeply grounded.
Yeah.
And so this thoughts came to me, or you know, this wrestling. It's wrestling. I was in a rabbi and clergy group with Rabbi Steve Foster, who's here in town, who's this powerhouse. He was the rabbi at the biggest synagogue west of the Mississippi, which is here, Temple Emmanuel, for a long, long time. And we were talking about these conversation series we're having on healing divides and reaching out across our differences. And he said, "What a waste of time." And I was like, wow. What?
Wow.
Thanks, Rabbi Steve. Tell me more. because that I really was curious. Tell me more about why you think that. And he said, "I have no desire to spend any more time with people on the far right. I would rather spend my time building up my people and winning." That made me super uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, those words.
Yeah.
My, you know, winning my people.
Yeah. Yes.
Sounds like Donald Trump.
Right.
You just said his name.
Right?
Baltimore.
Sorry, you're not allowed to say it.
You could say his name. It's
I don't know the rules here.
But now he's listening.
Yeah. Well, there's this tension around, and I think that oftentimes people in progressive communities haven't taken the time to be really rooted in our own identities because we're so scared of people who are locked in identities and don't make room for others. So I truly believe it's possible to be strong in your identity and yet open to others.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't fully agree with Rabbi Steve Foster. I love him, and it was a great thought-provoking statement. And I said, yes, I do want to build up my people. I want to stand with people who are working for human rights and equality. My people are people who are taking a stand and saying no to threats of deporting 11 million people or a registry of Muslims or leaving millions of people without health care. I believe strongly in those things, and I'm going to surround myself with people. I also believe in people who are going to engage in civil dialogue and mm-hmm. relationships and care for one another. And that means that I have to also name, that means I'm not going to spend my time with people who are divisive or hurtful or are supporting theologies that oppress people or tell women that they're less than fully human. And that is taking a stand. That is drawing a line.
Yeah. So this isn't even so much about Christianity or Judaism. It's whatever
it's values.
Whatever religion you're in doesn't matter, because what really matters is, like you said, is these values.
Yeah.
So talk about what are the values then of Interfaith Alliance, and because it's your dream job.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I met you, I go, oh, I think we would probably get along because we're doing interfaith work as well mm-hmm. in the pubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what are those values?
So I did a lot of listening to the community and finding out who are we as an organization. That was really, I spent my first year doing a lot of that. And who are we not? who are we and who are we not? Mm-hmm. And the values that come up again and again are people who are willing to go out on a limb to stand for human rights and equality, but also do so in a way that is authentic to who we are, that's not confrontational or combative, but is compassionate and open, values our diversity, values our differences, and sees those as strengths, and is fearless in some ways, willing to go into difficult spaces. We had a new admin start last week, and on the first day of opening legislature, there was a little, we were up in the galley and there was a little conflict happening over seats right in front of us. And she was like, "Oh my gosh, my palms are sweating." And I was like, "Kim, get used to it." Because every day we are in spaces that are uncomfortable and difficult. So it's those values of being able to stand in the difficult spaces with generosity, compassion, and a stalwart standing for human rights and equality.
Yeah, that's cool.
And when you gave the presentation to us, one thing you talked about is how we gracefully sometimes have to let people go.
Yeah.
Or not engage with them. Could you talk a little bit more about that, as more and more of us have Facebook encounters that mean saying goodbye to people we really love and care about?
Or in-person encounters.
Or in-person, yeah. Where we have to say goodbye for now, or maybe in this setting.
Yeah.
Because it's just too much.
Yeah. I think that's the hardest part of all of this, is especially as people who care so freaking much. And care what other people think and feel, and we're peacemakers. Yeah. And so the thought of a broken relationship is painful. And so sometimes we will prioritize peacemakers over standing up for those who are marginalized. And so where do we draw that line, yeah, and that boundary? And at times it's people we love. At times it's strangers that we have to say, "I really care about you. And my loyalty is to those who are hurting the most. And this is the stand I need to take. And this is my experience." And when we can have a conversation about it, that will be wonderful. Mm-hmm. If that's not now, that's okay. And then we have to come to peace with that in ourselves. And that's the hardest part.
And you
part.
Had a little phrase about what...
Bless and dismiss.
Yep.
I learned that in the nonprofit world a long time ago, which I think is such a great phrase.
That's
bless
cool.
and dismiss. Like, I love you and goodbye.
And it does sound that's like funny. Jesus. He would say, "I'm looking for hospitality, looking for somebody to open up their home and accept this message. But if you reject it, I'm going to dust my feet and move on."
100%.
Yeah.
And it's not a curse to you. It's a, "I'm dusting my feet off and I'm moving forward."
I think that's the distinction, because we think so dualistically that if you're not accepting or you're not engaging, then you're actively against. And I don't think that's the case.
No.
That's not what you're saying, at least.
No. The other piece I would just add real quick there is that we're always making a decision. And, you know, I think that we have to hold that if I just, you know, comply or don't take a stand on this, then who is losing?
Right. Yeah.
It seems that there are a lot of people, at least in my life, that I can speak of, not personally by names, don't worry, Facebook, who will tell me, who are strong Christians, really, these men who have been in my life, who at one season or another, gentle, loving, gracious, learned a lot, there was camaraderie, and then they'll call me out in public and say, "You're stirring the pot, don't do that." And I think, well, if nobody stirs the pot, then we just sort of let this season happen, and then what happens?
Yeah.
If we don't stir the pot, I mean, if you look at history, you have to have you know, these pot-stirring hot messes of people, don't you? Looking back at the Protestant Reformation, you can go further back in history. So right now, you want to stir the pot, you want to gather people,
yeah,
and you want to do it in the name of Jesus. So what would you have to say to religious people of our Christian heritage, specifically? And then even outside that, too. But I because that's my heritage and yours.
Yeah.
If they're listening.
Yeah.
If they can hear it.
Read the gospel. This is super radical. Read the gospel.
Yeah.
I honestly, so I was in a position on Sunday where I had written a sermon, and I had probably put some things that were pretty partisan, you know, pretty clear. And I'm standing at the pulpit before, and I asked the pastor, the regular pastor there, can you read through this and make sure I'm not going to say something that's going to get you fired or me yelled at? And so he read a couple things, or, you know, I said this paragraph are the ones I'm most concerned about. He looked at those and he said, so I understand what you're saying here. And we do have some people who are going to think that this is a little too provocative. And he said, so my advice is speak the gospel, because we are in a tension right now of the gospel is really clear. The Beatitudes is the lectionary this week. Blessed are the poor, ouch, blessed are the meek, blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who mourn. Yeah. And, that is unargue, can't argue that. And you're not getting into politics. You're reading the Bible.
And reading, I would argue, the words Bible, of Christ.
Yes.
I mean, these are the things that he felt were important enough to say. These are the actual issues he was concerned about.
Yeah.
But that's, you say political, and I think that we've grown up in this world in the West where we want to keep it separate, church and state. And yet, if you look at the gospel, and you have people who are even in the Anabaptist tradition who would say you would do that, but then Jesus' message seemed to always be political. And every single gospel, except for John, but John has his own agenda. The synoptics,
I think that's political. There's
very much a subverting of the kingdom, of the empire of Caesar, and so to say, oh, let's just focus on Jesus and spirituality, which is what we've heard a lot. We go, well, if we do that, okay, we're getting spiritual, but the spiritual is always getting political.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a recent American phenomenon to try and separate the scripture from politics. I think historically it's always been political. That's why the monarchy wanted control of it. Because they knew it was political, and they didn't want people to read it, because they knew it was political. And, you know, it's not a new reading to read it as political. And I really push back on, it's not partisan. That's when we get locked up. You know, I mean, you can get into the Jim Wallace type of writing that Jesus isn't a Republican or a Democrat. And when we get locked up in those partisan frameworks, that's when we can get in trouble. But if we read the gospel, it is political.
Yeah.
And it calls us, because politics is how we organize ourselves as people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so is the Bible. It's about how we live together and how we love God and love our neighbor, and that's political.
Can you give us some examples of things that which you've done in the last couple of years? Even within just the, you know, legislation that's happening, some of the lobbying that you've been doing, kind of giving us more of a tangible understanding in Colorado.
So tomorrow, there is a bill that will be heard, a religious freedom bill.
Okay.
Oh, man.
And this is the same exact bill. This is the third year in a row, and it's the same argument that has a law that passed in North Carolina and in Indiana, and we've seen across the country in different pockets, that says that our religious freedom is under threat and that it's trying to reinstitute religious freedom so that companies, businesses, store owners can refuse service to people. And it's primarily out of a response to the legalization of gay marriage. And so the impulse behind these bills, we have for religious freedom. It's the First Amendment.
Yes, we do.
It's alive and well. And that gives us freedom to worship, freedom to practice. Religious freedom in that way is not under threat.
Mm-hmm.
Muslim communities, we could talk about real threats to religious freedom, right. But for shop owners, there's not a threat to religious freedom. So we will be standing up against this bill tomorrow for the third year in a row. And
Third year in Colorado,
word for word. They didn't even change a single word in the bill. It's literally Groundhog Day.
Now, have there been like moving pieces in the Congress? I mean, how's this going to
seats and stuff?
So in Colorado, it will die in committee.
Okay.
So in the Colorado legislature, it's being brought by. We have a very very Tea Party conservative Republican minority in the House. We have a Democratic majority in the House, and in the Colorado State Senate, we have a Republican majority, which is a more moderate Republican majority in our Senate, and a Democratic minority. So this is going to a House committee,
okay.
That is controlled by the Democratic Party, but the far-right Republican Neville is bringing the same bill for the third year in a row. So we do expect to kill the bill, but we're calling it out and saying, so we actually have, we're doing a press conference at 12:45 tomorrow, and we have Michael Hidalgo from Denver Community Church is speaking at the press conference, and Rabbi Brian Emmerman and Reverend Jasper Peters, as well as the DA and some business owners and Republican a person from a Chamber of Commerce. But I brought all this up because Michael just sent me his words, and he's saying, as a Christian, the number one law is to love one another. So not really sure where religious freedom is being threatened because I have to serve you in my shop because it's the law. Our religious freedom does not let us pick and choose what laws we want to follow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So, there's one.
Well, that's like when we talk about theocracy, you know, it's like what comes first and what comes second when you get the U.S. Constitution and you get your religious faith, and that which comes first, and that real tension for some people to try to figure out, you know, God and country.
It's true. And how do our laws, because our laws are shaped by religious values, yeah. That's undeniable, but it's multiple religious values, and what are our common religious values, mm-hmm. Not religious values that one person holds and the rest of everybody else doesn't.
Because right. If there's not a principle of plurality in this country, then anybody's religion could start to trump. That word is just coming into the common nomenclature.
That really is. I mean, and that's one of the things that we've talked about is, okay, so your religious value is X. I could say I'm a peace-loving person. I don't want my taxes to go toward war. We don't have that choice.
Yeah.
Because we are citizens of the United States, and so we pay our taxes, and and so if we wanted to pick and choose what our taxes went to, or what laws we followed, we'd be really getting into messy territory.
It is interesting that you take an oath, not you, but someone has, with their hand on this Bible, and yet you have prayer meetings, and then in the next room you can have an executive order to bomb the out of people. So,
and it's good religious.
Yeah, that's fervor. Always baffled me.
Yeah. There are also about 6 bills up for, one is training teachers to have guns in schools.
Oh.
There's a lot of pro-gun bills up. Those will... In the state legislature. Yeah. So the Colorado state legislature is very divided, so not much will actually happen unless it's pretty bipartisan.
But if people like you weren't there paying attention to this after the third year, if you thought, oh, well, it's never going to pass, we're just going to move on, that's when they can slip these things in, and then it gets much harder to change them and much harder to protect actual freedom.
Absolutely.
If we're not doing that work.
Yeah. And expect it to come nationally, by the way.
How can we help do that work as individuals, and how do we best plug into the state and help you support you do your work?
So the biggest thing is to call legislators.
Okay.
And I know that people say that all the time and you hear it all the time, but it actually makes a huge difference, especially if you're in their district. So know who your legislators are, which most people don't know who their legislators are, and get their phone numbers. And We have a bill tracker on our website. We're updating it to make it a little bit better and more user-friendly. But there's quite a few other organizations that I would recommend, too, that have bill trackers and can send you alerts on important on bills that you care about. If you care about gun violence, there's a Colorado Faith Communities United Against Gun Violence. And if you care about economic justice, there's Colorado Law and Policy and different organizations that are watching, and so call. And then the other thing is to show up at hearings, having people share their stories, especially if it's something that's really relevant to you, is powerful. And honestly, I had no clue about the legislative process until I got this job. I mean, I knew what I learned in school, kind of. But until you go and actually see it, I realized, wow, our democracy is really amazing because it actually creates space for diverse views to be heard and debated. If it works, it's smart. The problem is that it doesn't always work, and there's always behind-the-scenes politics happening, and I've learned about that a little bit more. But showing up and sharing your stories and talking to legislators, because people just don't.
So if there's something really important we see on the bill tracker, we can call you and say,
yep,
I feel like I've got a really relevant story for this.
And absolutely.
Then you can help us do that.
Yep, absolutely. And we have a policy director, Jill Wildenberg, who is there, and she's watching, and she's also meeting with all the legislators and meeting with Republican and Democrat, and really also trying to connect on values. And so she could also help connect you to your personal legislator.
Okay.
Because they'll actually meet with you.
They have to.
Yeah.
That's encouraging to hear, because you do hear a lot, oh, just call, and here's the number, and so often you feel like it would just go to voicemail or go to some automated thing or whatever, and particularly on a local or state level, it seems like it would be more effective.
Absolutely, yeah, local, and I mean, I hear nationally, too, that it is, but I see it locally.
Right.
And I talk to aides of legislators who are sometimes tasked with, you know, taking those messages and counting how many people were calling for something and how many people were calling against something.
Well,
so they actually are weighing that information when they make something.
Well, and they weigh phone calls the most. Is that right?
Yeah.
Email and letters don't have quite the same weight as a phone call.
Yeah. Probably.
Well, and on local issues, you know, especially, yeah, on like your city council person or your state legislator, like they're not getting so many calls. And so if they hear four people calling right one after the other saying, don't do this or do this, like all of a sudden that feels like a block of constituents, especially if people are calling and saying, I'm your constituent, please do this, please don't do this.
Yeah.
It feels like
that. And also saying why and naming yourself as a person of faith. And if it comes out of a real core conviction or value, and then, of course, an experience, like anytime you have an actual story to share about something that is powerful. But also, you know, depending on the legislator, so we know which legislators to help use that language, because you can connect with them on that way, if that is a shared value system.
Well, and it seems like I've heard, too, that even though you may disagree with your legislator on some things, as you say, there may be an opportunity to connect on other things, either values-wise or the next time a different bill comes up. So it's also being willing to build that relationship with someone, even if you don't stand on the same platform as them all the time.
Yeah. Last year, there was a legislator from Colorado Springs. His name is Gordon Klingenschmidt, and he is wackadoo. I mean, like,
with that last name,
Klingenschmidt. Google him when we get off of this, and he has people call him Dr. Chaps, and he was Navy chaplain, and he is gays are all being burned in hell, and like he's pretty severe. He had said, Obama was a Muslim kind of guy. Elected with 70% of the vote in Colorado Springs, his
naturally.
First run.
Yeah.
And so when the woman in Longmont had the horrific, there was a horrific crime where the fetus was cut out of her belly, he said that that was punishment for abortions. And I mean, so yeah. When I say wackadoo, I mean wackadoo. Wow. I don't say that lightly. And so he was actually the one who brought the religious freedom bills last year. And he knew me because we brought 60 people to speak, to not to all speak, but with signatures. And we just killed it, killed his bill fast. And then he also is on all of the women's bills, and I would testify against those. And so we had a relationship. We knew an adversarial relationship. But then we had a homeless bill of rights that was up, which will be up again this year. And he was on the committee that was hearing it. And so I was like, you know, I have been wanting an excuse to go talk to Klingenschmitt, and I'm going to go talk to Klingenschmitt. Because how can you be so against abortion and also vote against people who are homeless? And so I sat and I scheduled a meeting with him, met with him. The first thing he says to me is, you really killed me on that religious freedom bill. And I was like, yep, I did. But we had a great conversation about values and about homelessness and poverty. And as a Christian, you know, I pulled out this is what I believe. And then I saw him walking in that morning to the hearing, and I said, how are you going to vote? And he said, I don't know, I still haven't decided. He said, I had a line of lobbyists out my door yesterday afternoon who do not want me to support this bill. And I said, well, who are you going to side with? And it was one of those moments I'm like, I can't believe I just said that. And he supported our bill.
Wow.
Two Democrats voted against it, and it was killed because of business interests. But Klingenschmitt voted to support people who are homeless. So,
wow.
You never know.
So what do you all think are like the major issues that locally in Denver, and we all live in Denver, or even just, I mean, we could talk nationally too, but that we would need to strengthen and gather our people? I mean, this seems to be, we can talk up in our heads, around circles, but then, okay, what does it mean to take action and to gather our people? What are the issues that you all think are important?
In Denver specifically, there's a massive issue with affordable housing.
Affordable housing, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On an economic level, that's probably one of the bigger ones for the city, I would think.
Yep.
So,
I think just taking care of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, because there are so many in this area, in Boulder and Denver, and I worship with a congregation of an accepting and open congregation, and I have learned their stories and seen their lives, and they need safety because it's something that most of them have not had in most of their journey, and we need to be one of those safe spaces. It's not going to hurt our Christianity if we disagree to allow them to be who they are, and that's where I get really frustrated. When you act like legislating them is going to make you a better Christian, I don't understand. They're some of the most disadvantaged people in our society, and we need to love them endlessly and help them be healed and grow and do that in healthy and good ways.
Mm-hmm. Especially our transgender community right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel so scared for them, and I have several friends that are transgender, and I just can't imagine the amount of fear that they feel right now with everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see a couple bills this year supporting the transgender community specifically. One, again, trying to stop conversion therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, is a bill that's been brought multiple times and has gotten killed in the Senate. And then also a birth certificate correction bill to allow people who are transgender to change their birth certificate to fit their gender. And that one also was brought last year and was killed. So those are two ways that there will be opportunities to rally. Those are ones that's huge to have faith voices coming and speaking, calling legislators, calling... and then affordable housing, there's a big one. There's actually a bipartisan effort to rectify a condo defect law.
Yes. Yeah.
And that we do expect to get through finally.
Really?
It's been multiple years, but there's bipartisan. Chrisanna Durant, who's the the House Majority Leader, that was the first thing she talked about in her address last week. Cool. So we expect that to happen. And there's some other affordable housing measures that are in the works. The biggest issue is the state budget, though. That Tabor. Is, I think, going to be, yeah, Tabor, and that is locking things up to where you can't make the progress that's needed to address affordable housing.
Right.
And education.
Mm. Yeah, education's
DPS
very...
DPS could use some help.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Education's very out of balance in Colorado, is that right? Because
extremely.
Of the way that the money's distributed and...
Yeah, I think we're 38th or 39th in the country for our funding of our public schools.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Do you have a beat on mental health funding?
That's a good question. I don't. There's such a need. We were just actually having a conversation about that yesterday. I don't know if there are any moves to increase funding for mental health care.
Mm-hmm.
Again, same thing, budget shortfalls
right.
in the state government.
Right.
But I know that there's a lot of conversation about the needs.
Yeah. I used to work not for an advocacy group, but for a frontline care organization. And we're consistently on the bottom of the list for mental health funding and efficiency, and all of the measures are all awful for
yes.
Colorado.
So. Yeah. And a huge part is as Tabor.
Yeah.
And the blocks to being able to adjust the budget to the needs.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
So lastly, and I'm kind of curious how all of us can handle this in the days ahead, because it's a tense time that we live in. How do we bridge this gap, this knowing that we have families and friends and coworkers and people just that we're going to rub shoulders with who don't have the same values, and they might have the same faith or they might not, but regardless of what faith they have, what are some helpful tips that you could give us for having conversation with people?
I think that at the core of it is to stay authentic to the core values of love and kindness and compassion while having strong opinions and being an advocate and working for justice, that it doesn't have to look ugly. Do you know what I mean? You can be strong, you can be opinionated, you can be fierce without being mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a difference, and we know the difference. We can feel the difference when somebody passionately and authentically cares about something, mm-hmm. but they also care about the human beings that are in the middle of the conversation. And mm-hmm. and so just digging deep into our common humanity and also not taking ourselves too seriously in the midst of it, and really holding strong to... standing with those who are most likely to be marginalized and harmed.
Yeah. That's
how do we do good self-care in the midst of this as we start to activate?
When
how do we
find
stay
out,
healthy?
Let me know.
Okay.
No, I mean, I think that space to step away. One of the things that I have said that I haven't really done, honestly, is to take in enough of the news to stay awake, but not so much that I become paralyzed.
Yeah.
And what that balance is going to be different every day, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one thing I did today, and I don't know if any of you had seen my Facebook post, because you love to follow my Facebook post.
Yes. Yes, we do.
And
all the time.
What? Because... But I had this moment. I think it was probably over the weekend, because we had a lot of good conversations over the weekend, and it was theological and it was economical and it was social. It was very much all over the place, but in a very healthy space. And I think there was a conviction that said, okay, this is good, because these people that I was around, those were my people. It made sense. But then I don't want to live in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
So then I made this post today saying, I really do want to understand the Trump administration. I want to understand the supporters, even if it makes me sick. And everybody knows right now who I was a Bernie guy, and then I was a Hillary person. We're not going to debate that anymore. I specifically said, let's not make this a thread of argument, so private message me. And of course, what did people do? They started to message the thread, and I go, no. I said private message me, but I do want to know. I want to know why you think that this platform, these issues, that they're important. And even But that's going to be hard.
What'd you hear?
So far, I've had one person who's messaged me. And then the rest, who I had to delete all their comments on the thread because I said...
It was just mean?
No, they were just posting all their resources. I go, no, I don't want it on the thread. I said, message me. Because once you do that, then everybody jumps in.
Yeah.
It's a big battle.
Just can't.
And I don't want that. I go, I really just want to understand.
Yeah.
Because you all know where I stand.
Yeah.
But we'll see. This could be dangerous.
Yes.
I'm trying.
Well, we are, one of the things, we are doing this Healing the Divide conversation on Thursday at Denver Seminary. And Mark Young is moderating, and I can't remember the name of the other pastor, and then a rabbi. And then Tom Wolfe is supposed to, but I'm going to fill in for him. He had a conflict. But we have talked about, we're committed to having dialogues where we're developing empathy. Mm-hmm. And that's the goal, is to listen and develop empathy. The goal is not to change each other's mind. And we're going to continue these conversations, and we're going to talk about politics. We're, you know, a lot of dialogues, it's like, we're going to talk about this topic, but politics is off the table. We are going to dive into the difficult issues with a commitment to civil and generative conversation. And we'll see how it goes. We're talking about trying to reach out to some other faith institutions, educational institutions, to see if we can even make the diversity a little broader. We'll see how that goes. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if you extend the invitation and then hear the ground rules. So we have ground rules, and they're right here. You know, no soapboxes, respect, extend courtesy.
Yes.
It seems to go well in the theology settings, but then once politics gets in, that's like, ooh, now you're really stepping it up.
Yeah.
So you're talking about people's money, and all of a sudden it becomes a little bit more
contentious. And their lives and the things that regulate their bodies.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yeah. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers. My tea.
Thank you.